So how's your day been?
Long work. You know.
Yeah, I definitely do. It's just FFR end of quarter, and so yes, I know about long days at work.
Yeah, I've just been getting killed with requests and people want things and you know, so
some dude wants you to record about Doctor Who with you.
Yeah, you know. Well, that I'm happy to do. I'm happy to make time for that. So
cool, good. So since I never really know how to start in with the ones that aren't like the official thing, so I'm just going to jump into it. The thing I kind of want to know to start with is, actually, we should probably let people know who you are. Is there any way that you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm Neo Wokio on Twitter. I go by Neo. My real name's Nick. One of those things.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So tell people who don't know you where you stand on Doctor Who. Like, what's your history with Doctor Who? Have you been watching it for a while?
So, yeah, so probably like, so I'm 26 now, so I've been out of college for a couple of years, and I started watching right around the end of the David Tennant era and the beginning of Matt Smith.
That's interesting. We started right about the same time.
Yeah, so what they did is they put it on Netflix right around the time Matt Smith got started. They put it on Netflix. And so I watched like all of it from the beginning, but like Matt, like I think, God, I'm trying to remember. I want to say it was, I don't think it really matters, but it was either like The Beast Below or like Flesh and Stone, where like one of the first episodes I ever watched, or maybe it was Vampires of Venice, one of those, early season 5, so early in Matt Smith's first season. And I just kind of got like onto it. And then my dad was like, oh yeah, it was like a show back in the day. Like I know about that. So I watched like all of the stuff before Matt Smith. And then I kind of just hopped as that was, well, not like classic, just like Eccleston and
Tennant. I was like, you watched the entirety of classic Doctor Who just over a weekend. You know?
what was on Netflix. And so, and then I got kind of rode along with the Matt Smith era, and you know, once that kind of started, when that got to like the 50th anniversary and all the hype and they announced Peter Capaldi, by then I was like fully on board. And then we kind of had like a long drought after Day of the Doctor and everything to wait for Capaldi.
We definitely did.
So then I went back and I watched most of classic. Obviously there's still a lot I haven't seen because there's a lot of lost episodes, and back then like right now I could go on BritBox and watch anything that's like been either salvaged or just like you could get on DVD, but like back then it was a little harder, so I would just go on like websites and just try to find like, you know, torrent episodes hypothetically.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so I mean that was kind of my journey, and it's kind of been inducted into like my, you know, like holy trinity of media. Like it's just one of those things that I'm super obsessed about. I don't know if I can swear here, but I was gonna say
oh no, go ahead and swear.
Yeah, super.
we swear all the time.
super fucking obsessed about it. So like it's one of those things, like it's kind of been inducted into that, you know, holy trinity or holy quad, you know, quinfinity or whatever, you know. Yeah, of things I'm just all about. So that's kind of been my journey.
Okay. Real quick, I'll go ahead and give mine after you answer this, but which doctor is your favorite doctor, and if you want to give a quick reason why?
Hands down, Peter Capaldi, the 12th doctor. Like, and it's, I want to say it's like not even close. Before Capaldi, I probably would have said Smith or Eccleston. But I think Peter just embodies what I like about the doctor the most. I like that he's older. Which is like an unpopular opinion, but I prefer when the doctor's older. I actually prefer that more than I care if it's like a man or a woman. Like if it's a woman, if it was a woman doctor, I'd prefer it be an older woman, you know, because I think that age carries that authority that is so emblematic of the character. And I just think,
understand that. Yeah.
Like the combo of Peter Capaldi and Stephen Moffat, I think they both understand the doctor in a way that not many other people do. And just like the way he's written in his series and the way he's portrayed by the actor, I think it's just peak. And then he has some of my favorite stories, which like, obviously, you know, there's good stories in every era, but that having your favorite helps, you know, in that. So that's definitely, you know, I don't even have to think about it as Peter Capaldi being my favorite. When I think of Doctor Who. When I think of the Doctor, I think of Peter Capaldi.
Nice. For me, it's probably David Tennant, and I'm one of those people. It's surprising to me that you're not one of these people, because it seems like everyone likes the Doctor that they were introduced to first. But I'm definitely in that camp, and the first Doctor that I ever watched a full episode of was a David Tennant episode, and I unfortunately don't remember which one, but his version of the character is currently my favorite. Now, I say that, but to be fair, I've only watched every episode right now with between Eccleston, Tennant, and Smith. I've only seen all of their episodes. I haven't seen any other Doctor's full catalog of episodes. Like, and so I don't want to give a full opinion on Capaldi, even though I will go ahead and say that everything I've seen of Capaldi, I love him as the Doctor. I had issues with the writing of his series, but I don't really want to stand by that opinion right now, because it's been so long since I watched them, and I have kind of evolved as a critic, I think, in the time since I've watched them. So I might feel very differently when I watch them now.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like, I love, and I kind of relate to that. Like I said, you might change your opinion, but I do relate to that in the sense of, like, I love David Tennant as the mm-hmm. Doctor. I really don't like the 10th Doctor. Like, you know what I mean? Just like the way he's written. I think he's written very well. But
he
just
not gels with you.
Yeah, he just doesn't gel with me as, like, I think all of the Doctor's worst personality traits are super amplified with the 10th Doctor.
I would tend to agree with that, honestly, based on my memories of it. But it's been several
brilliant.
Years. Yeah, oh, God, yes. Like, I love David Tennant and everything I've ever seen him in. But yeah, that's true of basically everyone who's played the Doctor. Well, except for Christopher Eccleston. But the only thing that I can think of with him is not fair at all, because that's Malekith in Thor: The Dark World, and no one should be.
He would tell you he hated that as well. You know, he hated that exactly. whole thing. So,
After watching the first episode, I kind of cruised around YouTube looking for content about specifically the Ninth Doctor, just to see if there was anything interesting there that caught my eye. And I saw a Q&A that he did as he was, like, starting some Big Finish audio dramas. And I like Christopher Eccleston's Doctor a lot based on this first episode. And after this, we can kind of just jump into that. But what struck me about listening to him as a person is that it's really funny to me that every time I've seen him outside of being the Doctor, the thing that stands out the most to me is that he's kind of an asshole. And I kind of love it about him.
Well, the thing about he is a little bit like that's I guess that's how he comes off. But, like, the thing is he's like a traditional mm-hmm. northern working class British actor.
Yes,
so he's very
absolutely.
Like no nonsense. And, like, I remember when he started doing Big Finish a couple years ago. For anyone who's listening that's not aware, those are like Doctor Who audio dramas, so they're, like, fully acted and have sound effects and everything. It's almost like a step above an audiobook. When he started doing those, he did a Q&A video on YouTube, and
that's probably the one I watched.
Yeah, one of the questions was flat out, like, why did you start doing it? And he was like, money.
Yeah, like, I love that about him. He's just like, yeah, I need to pay my bills.
Yeah, I got to pay my bills. I got to take care of my kids. And, like, if you ask him, like, he'll say, like, yes, Doctor Who's very special to me. It was a great time in my life, you know, but I don't think he holds it in. It was just another job for him. I don't know if it's like, you know, he wasn't a super fan like David Tennant and Peter Capaldi
exactly.
were. You know, it was just a job.
I get the impression he may have been a casual fan. Like, he was definitely, I think, aware of it for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
Just listening to his responses on that Q&A, it to me, and I should say this, when I say he's an asshole, I mean that in basically the same way that I mean it when I say I'm an asshole. And that's it's that no-nonsense thing. It's that, like, he is not putting on airs or trying to soften anything for anyone's feelings. Because, like, one of the questions was, like, after, you know, a lot of quiet time stepping away from the role and or being distant from the role, he, like, interrupted the tweet that he was reading that was asking the question to be like, that's your opinion.
Yep.
And I love that, like, that he is willing to just, like, be that nonsense. So, you know, when I have a fresh regeneration, really need to do is I need to make sure, because it regenerates everything. You go to full length hair on every part of your body, especially down there. So So when I regenerate,
he opens the pants. He's like, still not ginger.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And that's why you got to get in there real tough with Manscaped and, you know, make sure that everything is all trimmed up for your new companion.
For your new companion.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. I like this one better. Guys, thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring us. If you regenerate with a lot of hair down there, you should use our code opinionated at manscaped.com. At checkout for 20% off and free shipping. And that's in addition to whatever sales they've got going on. They've got a big Cyber Monday, Black Friday sale going on right now.
Yep.
So if you're thinking, hey, you've got to trim up down there, you got the hair, definitely go to their website, manscaped.com, and use our code opinionated. They sent us the swag bag. We got the Lawnmower 4.0. We got the nose hair trimmer, which I think they call the weed whacker. Mm-hmm. We got boxers. We got the whole shebang.
I liked it so much that I went ahead and got their single shave razor. So I'm trying a new product of theirs. Since it was Black Friday, I got a pretty good deal on it. So I'm trying that.
That's awesome. Did you use our code opinionated at checkout?
I actually did. I had to put it back
fantastic.
In there. But yes.
I was getting ready for you to be like, no, I forgot. And I was going to like tear into you.
That would be hilarious if I had forgotten our own code.
If you want like the podcast and want to help support us, doing that through Manscaped is a great way to support us and get yourself some awesome products that are going to help take care of all your hairy needs. thank you, Manscaped. And back to the episode with Neo.
Yeah. I want to step into talking about the first episode by saying that what I really loved about coming back to his doctor after all this time and coming back to this first episode of New Who after all this time was the joy and silliness that was obviously present in his portrayal of the character. Because I don't really associate that with Eccleston at all. When I think of Eccleston, I think of someone who is very serious and who is very no-nonsense. But that's not his doctor really at all. His doctor is happy and silly and joyful right up until he isn't. And right. I love that about him.
Yeah, and I think that was such a good choice because there's a lot of different faces for the doctor that you could introduce like a new audience to. Because again, this was 2005. It had been off the air for, you know, years.
Yeah, decades.
Since they had tried the TV movie in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done a full review of that on the main podcast. You and I may revisit it at some point if this goes on long enough.
And look, I really love that movie, but it's not fantastic. I mean, Paul McGann is great in it, and I like The Master as well. You know, and they've both carried it forward in Big Finish and done a lot of extra work to keep that going. So. You know.
Yeah, in some ways, Paul McGann is both the shortest and the longest running doctor, just because of how long he was doing stuff for.
I think he holds the record now for number of stories. It's either him or Tom Baker for Big Finish, because Tom.
Which, if you're competing with Tom Baker at all as the doctor, like damn.
I mean, Tom Baker's done over 100, and I think Paul McGann has as well at this point 100 audio dramas for Big Finish. It's insane how much they've done, but. Like, coming from the point of, you know, if you were to introduce a new audience, like, McGann is a good example. Like, the Eighth Doctor, I think, is a great introduction to someone who's never seen the show. Like, that movie, if it was a little better overall, would be a fantastic introduction. But, like, Rose, the first episode of The Revival, is probably the best and only way I could have imagined it being done. Like, the Ninth Doctor is just so complex. Like, he's coming out of, at this point in the episode, you know, that in the series we don't really know this, but he's coming out of the Time War. He's got a lot of PTSD and trauma. He's been traveling alone, you know, so.
And that comes out in little bits. Like, you can see the hints of that, but they definitely don't like lay it on thick with that. And that's what I think I love about it, is that what they are trying to focus on here is the fun side of the Doctor and who he is and what he is and the universe that he kind of exists in at this stage.
Yeah.
But you can, like, especially when he starts talking to the nesting consciousness, you can start to hear some of that, like, trauma in what he's saying and what he talks about there. And I like the hints of that without, you know, I think there would be a lot of temptation to lay a lot more on the table. Especially in an introduction when they are changing some things about the Doctor's past and what's going on with Time Lord since the previous series and all of that. But I appreciate that instead they tried to lean close into, one, the emotions of adventure and the joy of all this, you know, fun, goofy exploration that this guy kind of exists in. But also, I love how this episode, like, I mean, it's titled Rose, and in a lot of ways, while it appears on the surface to be about introducing you to the Doctor, it's also really about introducing you to Rose and giving you an idea of who she is and where she can go from the rest of the story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the episode starts with her. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't write the timestamp down, but I mean, it's probably, let's say 10 minutes before you see the Doctor, right? Yeah, like, there's so much that goes on. I mean, it's probably a little less than 10 minutes, but you know, you start with, like, in her flat, like, she's talking to her mom, you mm-hmm. know, then she goes to the department store and all of this stuff is going on, like, with her, mm-hmm. her life.
Has a quick lunch date with Mickey, and we're gonna have to talk about Mickey, but mm-hmm. has a quick lunch date with him.
And then, you know, all of a sudden she's kind of thrust into the, you know, the stuff when the Autons show up, which again is another choice that I think is really cool, because the Autons are kind of like, you'd think, like, if you were not a good writer, like Russell T. Davies is, like, you would think, like, oh, well, let's bring back, like, the Cybermen. Like, everyone knows the Cybermen, so, like, we'll do that. But it's the Autons. It's, you know, from what I remember from, like, John Pertwee's first story, which is, like, the Third Doctor, you know, all the way back. Off the top of my head, I can't remember another Auton story. So they're pretty obscure.
Right, right.
And just to bring them back as, like, you know, a minor threat that may not cause too many problems and allow us the time to kind of focus in on Rose and the Doctor and all of this stuff. Right, right.
I appreciate that they waited as long as they did to get to the Daleks. And I don't want to say too much about that just because I know that episode is going to be a blast to talk about. But yeah, I agree. Like, letting us see this in the way that I think so many of the Doctor's companions see him, as this, like, person who showed up and basically changed everything in your life very quickly. What I appreciate about this is that, you know, a lot of times in stories where there's a new companion or there's someone that the Doctor is taking along, they kind of immediately get swept up into his life. But what I like about Rose is that, like, it takes 3 or 4 different, like, starts for her to really go, you know what, I do want to jump on the TARDIS and travel with this guy. She kind of does have her own life. She has her own world that she exists in. She isn't the type of person that would necessarily just want to leave it all. But on the other hand, you can also kind of see why, like, not being around her mom and not, you know, having to have Mickey be your boyfriend might be a little more appealing than the other option, you know?
Right. And I mean, it's almost like by design for the Doctor, because he clearly at this point isn't ready to travel with anybody else. You know, he mm-hmm. pretty much, you know, saves her from the immediate danger and is like, you know, go home. Bye. Like, go have your beans on toast. You know, your boring little life. Don't tell anyone about this. And then he slams the door, like, to go handle the Autons. But then that little bit of him that can't help himself, as I view it, right, not explicitly mm-hmm. stated, but he can't help himself. He opens the door and he's like, you know, hey, I'm the Doctor. What's your name? And he's, you know, she says Rose.
I do love that.
That's it, right?
That,
run for
that
your
is
life.
So that is so him. Because I think one of the best things about the Doctor is that he is very full of himself in basically every incarnation. The Doctor is not a humble being, except when he is being actively humbled.
Exactly.
And so, like, I agree, he can't help himself but to, like, open the door and, like, at least introduce himself. And I think that speaks to sort of, like, why his incarnations are sort of known throughout history instead of just this, like, thing that appears, you know, like, we get a little bit of that in this episode from the crazy conspiracy guy who turns out to be completely right. But I like the idea that he is just always introducing himself because he can't help that, you know?
Yeah, he's the Doctor. He's got to let everybody know, like, who he is and all that stuff. And it's, you know, it's a little bit of self-indulgence and a little bit of, you know, he just likes talking to to people, you know.
Mm-hmm. So he, and I think it also it speaks a little bit to the fact that he is wounded, because like you're correct, I think, to say that like he's not ready for companionship or to have a companion, as you know, his traveling people are often known as, if you're not familiar with Who at all. But I think also on a maybe subconscious level, he's aware that he needs that, and that will become explicit at other points in the series. But I think even now he's kind of aware that like, no, I have to have someone in my life to ground me or I'll go insane.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
And it's very apparent based on like context clues in the episode. And they're very clever about like, if you're aware of the broader history and all of that stuff, you know, kind of what's going on, but it's mm-hmm. obvious, and especially later on with more information that we get, but he's right off the heels of a very big life event, and yeah. he's recently changed. Mm-hmm. It's pretty evident,
which,
you know, he's looking at himself in the mirror and, you know, saying, oh, my ears, and you know, mm-hmm. that's new and all of that stuff. So based on what came before, clearly what we know he was doing, mm-hmm. based on later events, it's been a while since he's been with anybody.
For sure. I love that bit about the ears, of like him just looking in the mirror and like, it's a subtle nod to people who do know. It's like, it's what you said, like that he has recently regenerated into this being. The only thing that I don't love about that is that it kind of feels like they're trying to have it both ways, of he is recently regenerated, but also he was somehow at the JFK assassination and at all these other points through history. And I can kind of go along with, there's a fan theory, I think, that like when he like disappears at the end of the episode before he comes back and tells Rose, oh, by the way, it can travel through time, that that's when he has all those adventures and does all that stuff.
Yes. I would go as far as to say that's exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of times where he drops Rose off and leaves, yeah. you know, so there's a lot of stuff in between that he could go off and do. And again, like he could appear in that point at any time, you know, whenever,
for sure.
right? In between any of him and Rose's adventures.
Absolutely. I just, my memory of this, and maybe I'll feel differently as I rewatch this series. My memory of this is that it never feels to me like he is, had adventures outside of what he's doing with Rose. It feels like this is his one outing in a lot of ways to me. And I mean, obviously that's not the case, because the Big Finish audio stuff that exists with him exists.
Right.
But it, I wish that they had done a little more to make that feel like it was the case. But at the same time, I think that might lose a little bit of the charm that this has. So it's sort of a bad situation either way.
But it is kind of a common thread in the series that like mm-hmm. a lot more happens in between episodes than we care to admit, you know, even in like a couple later series, like, you know, if you only judge by the time that Matt Smith's doctor's around, he's fairly young, but he does mm-hmm. so much off screen that like he's
right.
one of the oldest in terms of how long he kept that face. So a lot of stuff happens. And even like the 12th Doctor and his companion have a lot of adventures off screen that are alluded mm-hmm. to that are never explicitly shown. So there's a lot of stuff, yeah. and they do that all the time, where they play with, he's been gone for a long time, or it's been 2 weeks since his current companion has seen him, and what's he doing, where's he gone, sure. you know, stuff like yeah. that. So
that
I agree, though. I do think that it probably, like, a nice little nod, like, I used to think of it as, like, he just hadn't looked at himself yet, because he's been mm-hmm. traveling alone, and most mm-hmm. of, you know, what he, until later on, because in the earlier series, he, you know, would look in the mirror and stuff, but just based on what he's coming off the heels of, maybe he didn't even have time to care about what he looks like. So maybe he's been this doctor for 6 months, but this is the first time he's ever looked at himself in a mirror, because there's no mirrors on the TARDIS.
That's true. I could definitely see that. It does seem like an interesting, you could phrase that as an interesting trauma response, I think. Like, he doesn't want to look at himself until this point.
Right.
But speaking of this moment in the apartment, something I love about this episode that I feel like is a nod to like tell the audience the kind of tone that they're going to be going for the series is when he is initially introduced to Rose's mom and she basically just immediately tries to fuck him and he's just like, nah, I'm good. Yeah. And I appreciate that.
A man in my bedroom, like, anything could happen. No.
Yeah. I love that. It's nothing else, just no.
Yeah.
No. But I like that like kind of gives you the idea like this is not going to be a like overly sexy show. That's not what they're doing here. They're having fun adventures and that's not necessarily a direct part of it, you know?
Exactly.
And also, I mean, like he's not human, so that's going to work a little differently, I feel like. Maybe not anatomically, but like, yeah, anyway.
I guess we should probably talk about Mickey.
He's the worst. Like, okay, I'm again, this is another thing that going back through, I might feel differently when I get through the series, but my memory of him is that I hated him. And this episode did him no favors. Like, and this, obviously, not about the actor. I think that the actor for Mickey does a great job with what he's given. It's just, as a character, Mickey is kind of a worthless little shit. And he's there to be sort of a worthless shit so that when Rose leaves him, you're not like, oh, but she's leaving her boyfriend to go run off with the doctor. It's much more of a, like, nah, I get it. I would also leave that guy
for cool adventures. Really not done any favors by the writing.
No.
Which is a common thread for anyone not named Rose or the Doctor.
not wrong.
Yeah. So, you know, he, and honestly, his role in this episode is pretty forgettable, which I think is good because he does get fleshed out later. But now it's just like he's a boyfriend. He's kind of boring and him and Rose are kind of boring people.
Yeah. You know? And he's kind of not the best boyfriend because, like, she goes through her job being blown up, being, you know, not very far from the building exploding. And then he shows up like, hey, do you want to go get some food? I'll get you a drink. It'll be on me. And she's like, is there a game on? And he's like, yeah, there's a game on that I kind of want to watch.
Yep.
Like, and it's and then
they
split. Well, they
go.
Laughs.
They just they go like he's mm-hmm. like, OK, bye. And they go like,
exactly.
You know, so.
I love him sitting in the car when she like she's looked up the doctor on the internet and found this like crazy conspiracy guy's website and is going to go visit him to like find out what he knows about the doctor because it's like her only option. And Mickey is just sitting in there in the car trying his level best to look as scary as possible. But he just looks hilarious to me while he's trying to glare at the guy.
It's so funny. It's so mm-hmm. funny. Yeah, he's just, I mean, he's just useless in this episode.
Although I will say, I think that the best special effect in the entire episode is him as a plastic person. Because, like, it's not when when they have to, like, change his hands into, like, a shovel or something. But, like, when he's just, like, sitting there with that goofy look on his face.
And,
so like,
good.
They've done something. When they've done something to his face to make him look shiny and plasticky. Like, they just have done such a good job with that. And it's hilarious to me.
And, like, what I love about using the Autons is it really lets... Because Doctor Who's always been kind of B-movie-esque.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so...
If not C.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of... They don't have a lot of money to throw around. So, you know, I like that they used kind of a goofy but threatening villain, you know, that they could do something like that where it's like, it's played for laughs, but we still understand that... You know, there's an element of danger here that we should be aware of, but it's so mm-hmm. funny. It like just plastic Mickey just sitting in the. It's so ridiculous.
Uh-huh. I really do love it. The other thing that I really love about this episode is how much it focuses on the fact that without Rose, the Doctor fails this mission, essentially. Like if Rose is not there to help him, he wouldn't necessarily figure out where the Autons were based. There's a lot of stuff there that, like, no, Rose actually helps and actually contributes to them saving the entire human race, apparently.
Yep. That's a common thread. I mean, a lot of his companions are very helpful and, you know, help him get out of trouble and are very self-sufficient and, you know, at least later on, can handle themselves and sometimes are the ones who save the day for sure. And I like that they let Rose have that. So he kind of sees the spark in her, if you will, that, you know, he wants to keep traveling with her.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
In the future.
One of the things that I have noticed recently about fiction is that, like, people, it seems to me, will be, or at least I, will be much more willing to forgive a competent character than an incompetent character. And so making Rose someone who is proactive in a lot of ways and who is willing to talk back to the doctor or to, you know, kind of ask reasonable questions, even though he's a completely unreasonable person, it really helps her stand out as someone who the doctor does need, not as a, like, she's not just there to be the vehicle for the audience to ask the dumb questions that we would ask. She is also there to contribute what the doctor needs from her.
Yes, absolutely. And those are my favorite companions. The ones,
yeah,
that
those are the best ones.
Really challenge him and push back and kind of inhabit a space next to him that's not lesser, but kind of equal. I say kind
exactly.
of. I say kind of equal because you're never really the doctor.
No, I mean, even like I would say River Song as a companion. Like, she's the closest that I'm aware of that you could say is an equal, and I would not say she's an equal with the doctor, really.
Right, and I don't think she would either. So,
I think she would if the doctor was around, but if he wasn't, then she'd be real about it and be like, nah, no, I'm not.
Yep. So I guess at this point we can talk about the ship.
Yeah.
So you know, in
this
episode,
what are your thoughts on this version of the TARDIS?
I don't like it.
You don't like it at all?
No, it's just, that's a joke. They always say that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Actually, fun fact, in the script for this, the description of the TARDIS interior is, there has been another redesign. It's still mostly the open plan that we know, but this time the, you know, and describes the interior. And then the last line of the set description is, don't like it.
I love that.
Because pretty much any time another doctor, there are times where doctors meet each other, you know, as you tend to do in time travel. And almost all the time, the previous doctor will say, oh, you've redecorated. I don't like it. You know, like, I'm not a fan. So
I love that. Yes. And because, like, that does kind of lend itself to, that tells you, I think, like, even just that little bit encapsulates a lot of who the doctor is and a lot of his arrogance and,
yep.
And I love that. It's very, a very charming way of being like, that is a exact representation of who the doctor is. He is someone who is going to speak his mind, and he's someone who doesn't even necessarily like himself and his own taste sometimes.
Exactly. But as far as this design goes, it's up there in designs for me. I like it. It's effective. I think that it captures, like, the wonder of the machine, the fact that it's bigger on the inside and things like that. Mm-hmm. But there's really not, they don't do a whole lot with the space. Like, one thing I liked about, like, Matt Smith's TARDIS is, in the beginning, it has, like, multiple levels. You know, you can go beneath the console and stuff like that. And Matt Smith's second TARDIS and Peter Capaldi's TARDIS, they have, like, stairs up to an outer ring that, you know, and stairs down, and there's so much space.
Yeah.
Whereas this, like, it's just kind of a big room with a console in the middle, and that's fine because that's how a lot of them have been.
Yeah.
I like the kind of bronzy, like, almost steampunk-esque vibe from it, and I think it fits, like, this doctor. I think that's important too, like, that it
that's
makes
true.
Sense.
Yeah.
For the incarnation. So I really like the interior, and I love Rose's reaction.
Yes. When Rose's initial thing of, like, when she opens the door, steps in, and immediately, even though there is a, like, threat to her life outside, backs out and has to, like, run around to, like,
yep.
see that, no, there's definitely, it's definitely bigger on the inside. Like, that is such a well done reaction to that realization. It's another thing that the show does such a good job of introducing us to.
And it's always a treat. It actually never gets old. Like, when a new companion sees the TARDIS for the first time and understands what it is.
Absolutely.
But she gets over it pretty quickly. I would say.
She's kind of forced to. But right. Yes, you're right.
You know, and they start chatting, and he, you know, she's basically like, "You're an alien." And he's like, "Yeah, I am. Like, is that okay?" And she's like, "Yeah." And they just move on. Like,
and like, I think with a lot of characters that would feel disingenuous or like a thing they did just because they had to. But I really do think that it ends up being characteristic of Rose that she is very willing to just be like, all right, yeah, that's the situation. I'm going to roll with it and deal with it as it comes.
Yeah, she's quick to the buy-in. And I appreciate that about her. She's very quick to get on board. And she immediately starts, you know, freaking out about Mickey and, you know, everything going on with him. And the doctor's like, oh, I totally forgot about that. You know, like,
Yeah. And I wonder, like, part of me wonders if that's true, if he's just lying about that, because he doesn't feel like the type to me to actually forget. But also, I could see it being within his character to have just forgotten Mickey, because honestly, I would forget Mickey if I could. Real quick, I want to jump back a second and give my thoughts on the TARDIS, because even though this will be my favorite Doctor's TARDIS, this is probably my least favorite version of the inside of the TARDIS. At least that I've seen, because I haven't seen a lot of the older Doctor's versions. But I really do love the different levels that, like, Matt Smith's and Peter Capaldi's, like, gets. Like, the stuff underneath it is really fun, like you were saying. The thing I think I don't like the most about this is sort of what you said of, like, it's just a big room that they don't really do anything with. But I also don't really jump on board with the, like, almost corally type thing that it has going on. Yeah. I kind of like that in the implication that, like, maybe this ship is more alive than, say, like, the classic look where it's just all metal and machines and that kind of thing. But something about it just never sits correctly with me. And I don't think it ever does until Matt Smith takes over and it gets that redesign for him. I think that may be my favorite. I'd have to, like, actually sit down and compare his and Capaldi's as far as which are my favorites. But yeah, this one just has, I'm not joking when I say I don't like it.
Yeah, it's like the smallest of all the modern TARDISes as well. I think it's probably due to budget.
Absolutely, they couldn't, due to budget, yeah.
They couldn't make it as big as they wanted to. And like even later on, they start playing more with the imagination, like the library and the swimming pool. Mm-hmm. And there's a line or two in Eccleston series where he talks about, like, go down the hallway and turn left and turn right. Mm-hmm. And then there's a wardrobe there and all, you know, stuff like that. But
I would kind of like it if they had just done some episodes like that are, I guess, in a different show, they would be bottle episodes because they only take place in one location. But like, it would be fun to get to explore the TARDIS more than we do.
Yeah,
because I don't remember a lot of episodes where like we get to see like all the other different rooms that he mentions. It's usually just a like offhand mention of like, oh yeah, that's over there, totally.
Yeah, you get it once basically in the entire modern run. Where there's literally an episode called "Journey to the Center of the TARDIS," where
is that a Matt Smith episode?
It is a Matt Smith episode. Yeah,
Yeah.
But you know, early on, it's very much just the thing that gets us where we need to go most of the time, instead of, you know, I think it inhabits more of the ship role in the Moffat era. Like, I think Moffat talks about it and utilizes it more. I think in Eccleston and Tennant, it's more of like, yep, big room gets us where we need to go. You know, maybe we'll tow the earth with it once or twice, you know, so, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think that is something that, like, I really appreciate about the series in general, that this episode does do, yet again, another great thing about it, and that's it is unashamedly silly. Like, so much of Doctor Who is just goofy and silly, and it is never winking at the camera with its silliness. It's never like, hey, isn't this funny? Isn't this effect silly looking? It's always just like, nope, that is definitely a TARDIS, a police box just spinning in space and somehow towing the Earth. Or, yep, that is a garbage can that has, like, stretched and is going to eat Mickey. Like,
yep.
it doesn't care. It's just like, yeah, this is it. I'm here. This is what I look like, and screw you if you don't like it.
It takes itself seriously even when, like, you're watching it and you're like, come on. Like, what is this? This is just a guy with a tin can on his head. Like, this is insane. But
absolutely.
I think that level of they understand it's silly, but they still treat it. Sometimes they lean in for a laugh, but like they still treat it with like, no, this is a, you know, this is an Auton. It's going to kill you, even though it looks ridiculous. Like, and it looks goofy as all hell. It's still, you know, like a scary thing.
They do a good job with like when like at the very beginning, when one of them like does a karate chop essentially at where Rose was and like chops a steam pipe in half. Like those little touches like that give you enough of a sense of like, okay, I get that this is dangerous without them having to like actually murder a person in front of you, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I've pretty much talked about everything I want to with this episode. Is there anything that in particular you want to bring up before we wrap it up?
Yeah. So I think my favorite outside of the introduction is like when they kind of meet together and kind of, you know, have that first interaction. I love that
like long shot where they're just walking through the parking lots and all that, and she's just asking him questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I can't remember exactly when it is. I think it's probably maybe halfway through the episode. After they are in the flat, but there's a conversation he has with Rose where he tells her that he can feel the turn of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he can feel the ground beneath my feet. I can feel it spinning. The, you know, entire planet is going around. And he, you know, basically says, like, that's who I am. Like, I am so much more than you. And then I think that's probably the second time he tells her to piss off and, like, go away. But, like, that sense of, you know, wonder is, I think, one of the best moments of his whole run as the Doctor, is him talking about how small this planet is to him, you know, despite him being here helping and constantly coming back and stuff. I think it plants that first seed of, like, this weird alien who has a fascination with the human race.
I would agree with that. What would you say is your least favorite part of the episode?
Again, like all the, I think it's fine that we introduce Mickey. But again, I don't really care about him. Honestly, hot take, unpopular opinion, is all of the stuff with, I think his name's Clive.
Yeah, Clive, the conspiracy guy.
The conspiracy guy. I get it. It's like for Rose and stuff, but I think it's, you know, it's too early to have the Doctor be a legend woven throughout history who's always there and stuff. Now, I love that as like a theme. I think it's fantastic, and I love every time after this that it's brought up. I just think like the first episode, I think it's too early to be. And I know we have to plant the seed of like time travel for Rose and all of that stuff, but I think like this one guy who's like a conspiracy theorist who's managed to track down like multiple traces of this Time Lord all throughout it doesn't work for me. It doesn't ruin the episode, not even close. It's like a pet peeve, I would say. It's barely minor annoyance. It's barely anything that I would hold out about it. But that speaks to the quality of the episode. There's really not a lot for me to be like, this doesn't work, or I really don't like it. I think this is the perfect episode they could have made for the revival of the series. It does everything it needs to do to get new people bought in and old people bought in, right? So like returning fans and new fans. Like I know a lot of people who have watched this first episode as their first episode, and rarely do any of them bounce off the show if they're the type of person who would like the show, right? If they're predisposed to enjoy it, or if they're predisposed to not enjoy it, they'll definitely bounce off. But you know, I think it does what it needs to do, and it's definitely one of my favorite episodes of the whole show, in terms of, you know, a classic Doctor story. And it, you know, if I had the choice to just turn on a random episode, this would probably be one of the 20 I could pull from my brain immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with all that. If you had to give it a rating out of 5, what would you give it?
I would give it 4 creepy Mickey stares out of 5.
I think that's a very fair rating. I'm kind of sad that you stole my least favorite thing about the episode, because I thought that was a niche enough thing that like it would blow over. But I completely agree with you. To me, the issue with that is not necessarily though that it brings up the way the Doctor has, you know, affected history so much. Although I don't love that in connection with the fact that he's supposed to be newly regenerated. We sort of talked about that. But for me, the issue is that there is this guy who has completely and accurately put together who the Doctor is, what he is, and all of that, and it's just dropped and it never comes up again. If that guy came back later in the series, I think I would be okay with it, but my memory is that he never shows up again. Or what I would prefer is that he gives Rose a completely understandable, given the facts, but completely wrong explanation of who and what the Doctor is. I think that would be a much more fun and funny way to play that. And it would keep the audience guessing, I think, instead of just sort of laying it all out for them.
Yeah, I think it explains a little too much. And of course he says, like, he's dangerous and he's gonna, you know, hurt you and or, mm-hmm. you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, sure, he gets that wrong, but he gets pretty much everything else right. You know, exactly. He's a time traveling alien who, you know, is all over the place. So I don't love it. And it doesn't
really
happen
wrong when he's like goes dark with it of like where the Doctor goes, death follows. Cause like the Doctor doesn't save everyone. And that's one of the best parts about Doctor Who. But like he's definitely not wrong that like shit gets dark a lot of the time when the Doctor shows up.
Yeah. My biggest complaint with it is that it just never happens again or like mm-hmm. that often. So like it seems weird to like that this random guy was able to figure all of that out where.
Exactly.
As. You know, and there are historical records, like we know that for sure, but just to piece it all together like that, I think it, you know, it, touch on it more or just don't touch on it at all. I think there's better ways for her, I think, to figure out what he is and what's going on. And I'd much rather he just tell her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And he eventually does, but then we don't need all of this. You know, I think right.
Like he starts off going like it's a role passed on from father to son, and then by the end he's like, no, I think it's an alien. I think they're all him. Like, yeah. Like I said, it's mildly frustrating. It would be more interesting to me if he was like pointing out other versions of the Doctor instead of they're all Christopher Eccleston.
I agree, 100%. But I think that was just down to
they time.
Didn't, they yeah. didn't. I think they didn't want to make regeneration too obvious.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah.
But that said, my favorite thing about this episode, the more I think about it, like initially I was going to give it to the Doctor himself, just as a fun presence, but I think I'm going to give it to Rose because she has the more difficult job in a lot of ways. I think, she has to both carry us as the audience along through the episode and keep us interested in her. Cause she's really the one who is on screen much more than the Doctor is.
Yep.
But she also has to establish herself as someone that we want to follow in her own right. And I think that do you know the name of the actress off the top of your head?
Billy Piper.
Yes. I think Billy Piper just does a tremendous job of balancing both of those roles that Rose needs to pull off. And I was very impressed with her this go around.
She's fantastic. She's the only reason any of this works.
Absolutely.
100%.
I think I am going to give this episode 4.5. Yeah. 4.5 weird plastic Mickey heads that say cryptic, ominous things out of 5. Just because, like, I don't think this is necessarily one of the best Doctor Who outings, but I think given all that it has to accomplish, yeah. It does a masterful job of just nailing all of it. And it's like you said, anyone who watches this episode, I think, understands what Doctor Who is as a show, whatever the budget is going to be, even though this one is much more low budget than it becomes. But I think that it gets across the tone, the ideas, the characters, the central concept and the draw of Doctor Who is all laid out here. And it's fantastic. That's the only word for it. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Absolutely.
Well, this was a blast to do with you. we will try and do a few more of these. I would like to at least get through the entire season. We'll see how it goes. I'm not sure if this will be on the main feed or if this will be put on our Patreon, but either way, if you're listening, I appreciate you. I'm glad you're here. You can hear more of us on our website at www.opinionatedpodcast.com. You can reach us at Twitter at opinioncast if you want to come yell at us and tell us other things that we should be reviewing. Or you could email us at opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. We always love to hear from you. And if you get a chance, go leave us a rating on Spotify. It's one of the best ways you can help us out other than telling your friends about the show and telling them to listen. We're opinionated thing. It always feels cringy when it's only two people. But we are opinionated. I appreciate you being here, Neo. Yeah, you want to say bye?
Thanks for having me on. This was a blast. Do all that stuff that he said about opinionated. And yeah, thank you for listening.